Mr. Maven Reel 19, you're just mentioning being out on a listening patrol and actually being able to hear the engines of the supply trucks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're not something. If we blew a channel out, which wasn't continuous, but you know, you got nice and quiet, just sitting down. I mean, this could be 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I mean, night time was work. You found a night shift. And obviously, you would just be out on patrol, and then you'd hear the grinding of the truck and the gears. And you'd think, someone let me through. Just, you know, coming up and unloading ammunition and food, medical supplies, then going back. And he's going back out of it, and we're sitting there, you know, waiting for something to happen.
How far away from your front line was that drop-off point then, just as a matter of interest?
Well, they used to have to come up a road called the Mad Mile, because part of it was viewing for the Chinese, but seeing them coming up, and they used to lock the shells over. And it was, I'm not going to be a map, I can show them. It was behind the 11th Platoon's position where it came up. Well, when we went on the second time, 10th Platoon went to the base of 355, and you end up, I don't know how many steps, that we moving on over, right up and over the summit, and down on the forward slope. Now, 11th Platoon went in round the bottom, and instead of going over the top, because the spur went down towards the valley, and 227, which the Chinese were on, obviously was doing at night time, and they came round, and they went in that way. They didn't have to go over the top. So there was, and then that was the way they took the wounded out. We didn't cart them over the top.
They came round the side.
Came round the side. But in places in blue with the Chinese on 227, because, 355, and 227, there's 100 metres. And so, okay, the company which is on the top is Blake, the King of the Castle. But when the D company was down on the forward slope, the Chinese were King of the Castle, because they were looking down on us. We had camouflage nets and everything over the top, so they couldn't sit back. We were quite close. You know, looking down your back leg.
Because you were more or less on a forward spur from 355, weren't you?
Yeah. It was the spur that was going to be hit first if they want to put an attack in. I mean, I don't know how right it is, but I reckon that the Commonwealth sector, 355 was on the right-hand side, which was the highest. I don't know if it was the highest on the line. It was highest in the sector. High. And on the far end of the line was the Hook. Now, both of those positions guarded the way down to Seoul. Whoever had 355 stopped them. You know, if the Chinese had it, the gate was open to go straight down. The same with the Hook. It was in such a position that whoever held that held, obviously held the high ground, and they couldn't get past. And so the two positions, they were the two main ones. The positions in the middle, like one Yong Dong, I mean, obviously they were miles away, but compared to 355, they were miles away, you know. In fact, we had copies that were on the top of the trenches, so they started shelling and they were dumped back in again. But that's just to give an idea of how far they were, you know.
Would you be aware of that at the time?
What?
That tactical position, the importance of 355.
I think so. After it's finished, like, I think you've seen news releases, I mean, the way they came down, the North Koreans, they took Seoul in a matter of hours. And I had to come down that way. I think on our left, no, on our right, it was hilly. I don't think there was, I would have thought the access found to come down in numbers. shall we say, that the big flat land that there was there was down through past 355 and down, like, in between 355 and the hook. And because, and that was a really land up and down. When he landed at in John MacArthur, he cut straight away into Seoul to cut the retreating army off, because he couldn't, if he had that and took that, he trapped their army between Busan, because the route was up through where 345 and that one.
So your position there was more difficult than the first time you were in the line, because you were observed by the Chinese in 227.
All the time, yeah.
So was there any, you mentioned camouflage nets, was there any other precautions that you took?
Not really. The weapon pits, you know, were all covered in sandbags and everything, you know. Obviously the trenches couldn't be covered in, because there was such a quite a funny bit of space to cover. And they were just camouflage nets all, and they used to get blown in with a shower and that, and you know, you put them back up again. But there wasn't that, well, you just didn't move about during the day. You kept the movement to a minimum. And you were burning night shift, so you were keeping, same as them, like, you know.
So you were you aware of this and you were a lot more careful?
Yeah, right. As I say, when we went on Yongdong, when it was, you know, miles away, you just wandering around, you know, I don't know whether you were in sniper range or what, but initially everybody was, oh, you know, they're over there, you know, and never crossed the fence, sort of wandering around the field shells, like, oh, no, they're still there. But it was a bit heavy, like, it's all right if there's no action coming in, you know. I don't know why they hit it. It was the time I didn't get hit 355 at all. You know, it was a hell of a job to capture. I think the Australians or the KSLI captured it. But I'd have a hell of a job taking that, like. And we were there and had to hold it. And I don't think there was any low activity into the reef. I don't know why. All I was saying was the talks were going on and they were keep. The Chinese would keep probing along the front. And then it was a third level on. If they thought they were going to gain some ground or gain a hill, no matter how high it was, they would break the peace talks off, because they would think they were going to advance. But if things got stale, they would start to talk again. And these probing attacks, I mean, the news communicators, I just said, they were just minor patrol activity, you know, I mean, you're fighting for bloody, you know, you're fighting for bloody life, and that's all they get. They don't tell the truth, they're very economical of the truth.
So this position that you came on to, this second position, the construction of the trenches was pretty much the same as before?
Oh, yeah.
And your hoochies?
Just tapped out of it. Initially, I think the engineers and the salt pioneers must have gone up with, I don't know, pyramid or plastic edges and blasted a load about, you know, digging through them. Wouldn't have been easy to dig in because it was like the hill was rock, you know. And it's like, when I went back on the revisit and you see them, the mountains are just sort of, they're not gently sloped, they just come straight up out of the ground. Like volcanic, I suppose you would call them. It didn't look as though they'd been formed by ice glaciers coming down. They just come straight up. I must say they were vertical, but a lot of them were. And there was shrubbery on them. The bushes and that, you know, because you can see it. Obviously, a lot of them had been shelled and the tops were blown off and this, that, and the other, but it still, nature takes a lot to knock nature out of it. But it was just like rock.
Yeah, I think you mentioned before it was a very rocky area.
Yeah.
Not much topsoil.
No.
Very sparse vegetation. No trees.
Well, I found when I went back and revisited 3 years ago that the Japanese chopped all the major trees down. The Japanese conquered Korea at the beginning of the century, and they occupied it until the end of the Second World War. And they imposed their culture on the Koreans and their language, because the language we taught them was Japanese. We didn't know. But apparently Japan's short of coal and oil, and they make charcoal out of the timber and it gives the furnaces. And they reckon that they decimated North and South Korea. They took all the wood, the tall standing trees and everything, and carted it all to Japan and made it into charcoal, just left the bushes in it. Because when we were there, the guide that was with us was telling us, since 1901, the orphans, I suppose, they've had a tree planting. They plant ever so many tall trees, you know, on the sea of the land, but, you know, Scotch pine or whatever they do. And you can see that they're starting to obviously take hold of that. But there wasn't anywhere, there was more forests or big woods or like that.
You took over from the Australians?
Yes.
That second time. Uh-huh. Was there a difference taking over from the Australians? Because I remember you described last time taking over from the Americans. The Americans were quite dirty almost.
Oh, they were. Well, there was nobody as clean as what they were. I don't know. We always had to clean up when we left. We had to leave it. It's like good housekeeping, isn't it? We had to leave more litter or anything. But other regiments, the Australians, they weren't as bad as the Americans. The Americans were worse. The world's worse. The Australians, they were all right. Obviously, they weren't as strict as what our officers were. I mean, they didn't stand to attention when the officer came by. They just called them by their first names and that. There was discipline that way. It was very, very lax. But on the other hand, they were good soldiers, you know. They were very good, actually. We weren't frightened to go down in the valley and shout and come on, have a fight. I mean, we just got down and stayed quiet. They went down and says, come on, you know. But taking over from the Americans, there was a lot of stuff left, half-eaten food, ammunition, and one instance, a machine gun, a brown machine gun.
That left machine gun?
I suppose it was too heavy for him to carry. And I just left this brown machine gun, and when we got there, none of us knew how to maintain it, or if it had any stoppages when we were firing it, how to overcome the stoppages. But we had three Korean CATCOMs, which are South Korean Army infantry attached to us. And they'd been trained on American machine guns, weapons, so give it to them, look after.
Were these the Koreans that were helping bring supplies?
No, these are soldiers. But the ones who were bringing supplies, which I would say were like Pioneer Corps, or, porters. But the ones who, the CATCOMs, were the army that had been trained by the Americans. They were infantry. But seeing as they'd been trained by the Americans, they had all the American men. Okay, they had other stands and that, and we showed them how to use them. But they had been trained on American equipment.
And what was the role with the company?
The role? Well, they were just one of the lads. They were just in the platoon. I think they company had three. Each company would ask, why, I don't know. Whether they were there to interpret, if you got a prisoner, or whether it was an agreement where we had to take some, or whether it was their means of pumping our manpower up. You know, I don't think the Italians ever put the full strength while we were there. But they were kind of lads. They were the lowest paid employee and we were the second lowest paid. We had a lot in common with them.
And did you have any in your platoon?
No, there was some in 11th platoon. And I think there was some in 12th.
I just wondered what contact you had with them and what you thought of them.
Oh, you met them, you know, you would see them if we were down where there was a field kitchen anywhere. They were in the kitchen with you for the food. They lived with you. We've got our Russians, you know, and a lot of them could speak broken English. Because you see, it had been a South Korea had been an American protectorate, you know, after the war. When the superpowers, Russia and America, carved the world up, Russia took over the Balkans. You know, all that way. And America was looking for the Pacific Basin, so they got Korea. And so South Korea was American dominated from 1945. And so they learned American. When they got out and knew the people, got something to say, like speak the language in there. And so they spoke reasonably good English. And I had a kind of confidence in them.
What was the attitude of the other men towards them?
Yeah.
Were they well treated?
I think they were well treated. The stuff with the same as what they did. We were some killed. I mean, they were getting killed the same way. You know, with us, the battalion had some killed.
With the Durhams?
I don't know if one or two killed. I think there's one killed on the 345.
We'll talk about that in a minute. So the conditions were generally very similar to what you'd been through before.
Yeah.
Trenches, your general living conditions.
Just the same. Yeah. Rats.
The rats. What was the weather like this time? Because we must be moving towards the summer.
Well, we're getting late spring and summer, and it was getting warm. Get mosquitoes coming around and start to get a bit of rain. It was nice, I mean, it was a nice place. Have extremes. Extreme cold in the winter and hot and dusty in the summer, and then you have a nice spring in the autumn. But when it rains, and it's not rain. The mosquitoes, of course, the mosquitoes can't really come out at the time of year. It's when, with enough things, it's so tropical and it's not humid all the time. But I think the mosquitoes, like our midges, you know, you don't have them in the winter, where they're going, where they're going, but just like, they come out like the midges.
Were they a problem?
Aye, because you get malaria with them. Every day we take malaria tablets now. But we never. If you're anywhere, the whole time was in Korea, we never had any mosquito nets. You're supposed to have nets. In Hong Kong, we had the nets. In Japan, when in the bikes, we had the nets. But there's nobody going to pull a net up over you in bed and then have to get out and get caught in the net. You've got to get out quick. I mean, we never had our clothes off when we were in line. We slept with them on, set your boots on. So you're not, I mean, with a net, it's got to hang up somewhere, there's nowhere to hang it. Then it comes down over the bin, you tuck it in, so you're completely covered with it. Like, it's just not practical. So, we went to a bedding sleeping bag, and it was cold. Well, after that, when it was getting hot, we weren't getting in the sleeping bag, you just had a blanket over there. Then, we used the bag, I had a big thing, I'd itch, you know. But we took tablets. It was supposed to be mosquito repellent, but it used to stink. Some lads recommended attracted them rather than repelled them.
What was that, something you burned? Or?
It was somebody stuck from your face, like camouflage, you know, you put it on, but we just relied on that. It was paladin. The mosquito tablets that we took them every day. That was another thing, see, every day you had to take tablets. can't remember whether it took salt tablets in Korea, but in Hong Kong, definitely salt tablets every day. And maybe that's a look in Japan because it's more icy than Korea. I mean, you don't need the salt when it's cold, it's for the hottest, to put the salt pack in the body after you sweat, but so you don't take them in. The mosquitoes, mosquitoes, and so you see the fireflies. It'll grow like just like a little cigarette end flying all around you along the bushes and that. You're not going to see them anymore. But as it goes in, initially, it's, you know, it's going to happen. Yeah, just like cigarette, blown cigarette ends.
Was the rain much of a problem?
It was a big problem.
Was it a problem because of the rocky trenches?
Not so much of the fire, it did come down, but not in torrents, shall we say. Like it did when it went down, but rain, and it came out like everything else, in the trenches, it didn't run down the trenches. It didn't really get into the bushes because they were so constructed that they couldn't only through the roof and down the sides. And the hutches, the atmosphere hutches, was usually only a step up from the trench bottom. So you didn't have to climb upstairs, but you know, you saw the step. The water couldn't come down and run in unless it was a torrent. You know, it just went down. But it filled the shallow holes in that we were using as like positions when we were on outposts. I mean, when you're in no man's land, you can take a pick and shovel and dig a trench or a hole and just use what was there. There's plenty of shell holes. And so, over a period of time, people using the same ones had made them a little bit more enlarged than a bit or something like that. But they filled with the water, and of course, if there was no shells coming over, and if there was no harassment shelling or anything like that, and the craters were full of water, like you just lay on the top, you know, and nobody in the right mind is going to sit in the water. But if the shells are coming, I mean, no problem. I mean, you're going to get down below ground level. And so you just slid in and just sat in the water, you know, and wait until the shelling stopped and crawled out again and back in again. That wasn't very nice, but you just accepted it. And I think I never caught the cold when I was up there. The whole time I was in the army, I never had the flu. I was never laid down, you know, and we had wet feet, we had wet, it never affected us.
So your daily routine and everything was pretty much the same as a campaign. It was
sleep during the day, out at night. Any maintenance we don't was always done at night.
And your nightly routine was similar. Patrolling.
The bread and butter patrolling was the listening patrol. Then there was the ambush patrols and the flight patrols and that.
Were they of a similar intensity as before? The same number of patrols?
The idea of the SEALs, the idea was get to know the enemies coming. See, we had superior firepower than what the Chinese had. We would call on a lot of heavy artillery and mortars and the Air Force. And so consequently, I don't know what the brigade idea was, but the SEALs idea was, if he got plenty of forewarning that they were massing to come and put a major attack in, the patrols would have to fight their way back in, and the artillery would get them before they got actually into the trenches, you know. That was the idea. And then the hook, they used to bring the artillery down on their own trenches. that, oh, I hate this bad note, but everybody dreaded going up there. I'm glad we didn't go up there. The Chinese used to overrun them, and they just used to bring that tilly down on top of the underground trenches, and then put a counterattack in and chase them up, and that was happening regularly, that. But we could see them. It's funny, you know, you can be, okay, we're in on 3x5 or on your ground, and then over on your left, you can see them battling like bloody hell, you know.
Did you witness any
like
of these things? This is across at the Hoog.
I know, the Dukes are getting the hammer tonight, you know.
Did you know who was on the Hoog at the time?
Usually, yeah, you know. I said, oh, the bloody Dukes are getting it tonight.
And you could see these attacks going in.
The faces and the shells and everything going up, you know. Could hear the guns going. Keep over there. Rather than the North.
For all you had a lot of sympathy for them, it was rather them than us.
But
that must have been quite worrying in itself, watching an attack happening somewhere else in the line and thinking, when's it going to be our turn? It must have been quite difficult for you.
It's scary. Of course, you think, the ones on 3x5 are behind you, could say, oh, I mean, they couldn't see anything. But when we moved on the young John, we could see them, you know, because we were actually, Yong Dong was in his position for the Hoog. But no, the Chinese, they used to call, I keep speaking of the Chinese, I mean, I don't know where the Chinese went to be, but at the time of war, we knew China was in the couple of divisions, Qian Dong, and how, I mean, I think the North Koreans just about what happened when MacArthur White. The North Koreans came down, pushed them down to Busan, and then they pushed them back up to the Yalu River, which was the border with China. And I think they just about decimated the North Korean army. And of course, the Chinese just sent hundreds of thousands of troops in, and it was their manpower alone, I think, which pushed everybody back again. And then they sort of held them halfway. Seoul changed hands four times. Once when they came down, they were pushed back, then they pushed the UN back again, then the UN pushed them back. So four times up and down that country. And you can imagine what the devastation was like when armies had been up and down and fighting.
So you would have seen evidence as this as you went into the reserve lines
When the time the short time was in Seoul, you could see it all, it was just wrecked. There's only one bridge over the river.
Getting back to the second time in the line, was there any change in the patrolling or the organisation of the patrolling?
All the same.
The running of the patrols?
All the same. It was a company. It was a policy to have everybody have his patrols out, as many as possible. Each patrol went out, they had an 8-year settlement. You were in contact with your company, and of course your company was in contact with the CEO and headquarters. Lots of the time, you just kept, there was no need to get on it. I mean, you took it out, and you only maybe spoke into it half a dozen times all through the night. It was purely there so that you could report anything that was happening. And you, by you reporting back, and all the other patrols reporting back, the people in headquarters get an idea of what was happening, and act accordingly.
Is this the company headquarters?
My company, right. The company, if the company, we were CNN, this, that, and that. Then the company commander would phone the CEO and say, look, I've got quite a bit of activity on our front here, And then, what's happening? And then we would get it together and sort it out.